Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley. I'm here with Matt Stevens, the Illini guy staff reporter who covers the football team, and we are getting you ready for the season. And it's an exciting time as people are really thinking there's a good shot at a bowl at the end of the rainbow here. So, Matt, if there's anything that Brett Bielema is famous for, it's offensive linemen. How's he feeling about this offensive line? What do you think about this offensive line?
Yeah, specifically in putting offensive linemen in the National Football League, because short of Nick Saban, nobody does it better over the last decade. So I think he feels good about it. And one of the reasons, let's just start at the top and let's start with the old man in the group. One of the reasons he feels good about it is, I think, Mike, for the first time since – about the middle of 2020, we have a healthy Alex Palcheski. Okay. He was not healthy in 2021. I'll be honest. I don't think he was healthy at the beginning of – I don't think he was healthy in 2020 either, coming out of COVID. And then we all know in that COVID year, he ripped his knee up.
Yep.
That took a while. Once he got rehabbed on the knee, Mike – physically and conditioning wise, he was never what he wanted to be. And as we all know, they finished that 2020 season and he had to roll into 2021, basically coming out of, the rehab with no conditioning. They tried him at right tackle early on in that Nebraska opener. That didn't work because one, his body wasn't right. And two, I don't think he felt like his leg was right still.
Yeah.
So they kicked him inside to guard. I think for the first time since, again, like the middle of 2020, Alex Palcheski is healthy and he looks good. He looks leaner than I've seen him in about 18 months. Physically, I think Tank was able to get him. Strength has never been really an issue with Paucho since he's been an upperclassman. What's been an issue for Paucho is, I think, athleticism and getting his body to where he can be a solid right tackle on that island. He looks leaner to me. He looks like he's in good physical shape. And I think that they feel really good about throwing him back out on that island at right tackle. Cause it wasn't a fundamentals issue. It wasn't a technique issue. It was just that physically he just wasn't right. So they feel good about that. They feel good about Julian Pearl being completely healthy after the spring. The club is off the hand and he's going to be able to, I think, attack left tackle the way that he wants to. And now you're just trying to answer questions inside because you lose Doug Kramer. I know you lose Velo at left tackle, but they always had planned to throw Pearl out there at left tackle when that time had come. You lose guys like Blake Gerasotti. You lose, a couple of other, older guys inside at center and in guard. And so – those are the questions that I think Bart Miller is going to have to answer really early on, but you start on the outside with your two tackles and they feel pretty good about it. And then they feel pretty good about where they are on the inside at guard and with some guys that maybe haven't seen a lot of playing time, like Jordan Slaughter, who was going to start last year until he broke his foot or broke his ankle in fall camp. And then you look at some of the JUCO transfers that they brought in, like Isaiah Adams from Canada through the Kansas JUCO system, and then Zy Chrysler from the Mississippi JUCO system. And then at center, they've retooled Alex Pilstrom and made him into a really productive center. But the depth there is really good because Josh Kreutz, whose dad was a NFL All-Pro,
yep,
and got coached really, really well at – Loyola Academy with John Holacek as the head coach. He's battling for that center spot. So then, and then they when you saw that barge package at Penn State, you had Kreutz and you had Zachary Barlett, who's also going to compete at one of those guard spots potentially. And he's a swing guy that can play guard and tackle. He's in the depth perception or depth picture as well. So when Brett Bielema made the comment, Mike, before the Penn State game, that he didn't like where, his depth chart looked from a long-term perspective, that you knew that this was going to be a transformative process. And that's why they've hit the transfer portal so hard. with offensive linemen, and that's why they brought in five freshmen to, and we'll talk about them later, I'm sure, but they feel good about the depth they have at this, at this really, really important position for a Brett Bielema program.
So what kind of blocking scheme do you think then that they're going to be using for that? This, you know, you got two fantastic backs, Chase Brown and obviously Josh McCray. You've even got some guys on the bench that look like they could be, you know, impact running backs. What do you think they're going to need to do to spring these guys and get them the running lanes that they need?
What they always like to do, Mike, is get their interior guys out on the perimeter and for their zone. I don't want to call it a zone blocking scheme, but they really want to highlight the athleticism of their big people, as weird as that sounds. And so you saw Zy Chrysler's, you know, come over and make a huge, huge block, you know, coming all the way from right guard all the way to the left hash.
Yep.
Bring a run in the spring game. And that's something that, you know, you've got to get Zy Chrysler from 360 probably to 340. And that's what they've been doing in terms of weight. That's what they've been doing with Tank Wright all summer to get him to that point where he feels good about that. They thought Isaiah Adams was going to be a tackle when they brought him in. He probably will be before he finishes his Illini career. But in order to get him on the field and get the best five guys on the field, they might have to play him at guard, which is fine because athleticism-wise, he'll work out well there. You know, if they have to move Paucho to guard, they can throw him in at guard. But that, again, they really like him at right tackle. So I think that they can go – that question is interesting, Mike, because I think just like Barry Lenny Jr.'s offense, I think that they can use a lot of different schemes. Now the difference is that you had a guy in the middle in Doug Kramer who could take care of everything in that regard. And from a communication standpoint and an intelligence standpoint, and quite honestly, just a nastiness standpoint, Doug was the perfect center for this kind of transitional to Brett Bielema's system. Even though Doug probably wasn't the biggest cat in the world and probably somebody that they don't body type wise want to have at center, you know, much too longer under Brett Bielema. Doug mentality wise and just intelligence wise was exactly what they needed. And that's why the Bears drafted him in the sixth round. And that's why he's taking first team reps for them already in preseason camp. So I say that to say that if Illinois is going to be really, really good in whatever they want to do. And if they want to get really, really variant in what they want to do in terms of scheme up front, then Alex Pilstrom is going to have to be really key at center for them. And he's going to have to make that transition and make it pretty, pretty seamless if they want to do that. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case early on, because I don't expect anybody can think that Pill is going to be like Kramer.
Right.
But I think that they feel like from an athleticism standpoint, they're really the only thing they really worried about with Pill in the spring was his being able to make the shotgun snaps. He's kind of cured that with them being able to work with a ball for the first time in the summer with that new NCAA rule helped out a whole bunch. But the more that they can do in terms of variance, in terms of scheme, whether it's zone, whether it's man on man, whether it's getting guys on the perimeter, that's going to depend upon what Alex Pilstrom can handle from a playbook standpoint and from a at the line of scrimmage, change it up standpoint. And so I don't know if we'll know that until they line it up on the 27th against Wyoming.
So you look at the freshmen, any of them going to make an impact this year? Are we going to have this like grow them for the future? Like they used to do at Wisconsin?
Yes, that would be that. I think that's your best bet. We talked to, again, Paucho about this the first day after the first day of fall. And we all know that Paucho at 18 years old had to go be a starter on Lovie Smith's Big Ten offensive line at 265 pounds. And that wasn't going to go well. And he knew it wasn't going to go well.
Right.
That's a child going up against men. Like there's no other best way to describe it. These are not children. And this is why I mentioned the freshmen, and I specifically mentioned them to Paucho. Joey Okla is listed at 320 pounds on the roster.
Yeah.
Hunter Whiteneck is listed at 345 pounds on the roster. Mountus Moeller is 320 pounds on the roster. These kids came in and weighed in that way. Do I think that they'll make an impact? Probably not, because I think that Illinois feels like they have enough depth with experienced guys. And my God, why would you want to throw a freshman to the wolves like that? If yeah. there's anybody that I think can, it is Hunter Whitenick. If they get real, real deep at tackle, if they have to go that deep, they're really hoping that they don't have to. The perfect example I can give you, Mike, is that so Aaron Henry in the cornerback room and the DB room, he got to redshirt four defensive backs in his room that never had to play a down last year as true freshmen, but he knew that they were super talented. They would love an Illinois if Illinois doesn't do it that way with these five offensive linemen that they brought in this 2022 class, then something drastically went wrong.
Right. Injuries.
With their depth. Exactly. Correct. It would have to be injuries, Mike. It really would be. They feel too good about the veterans that they have coming back on this offensive line. And they feel really good about the plan that they have for these young guys. I almost want to call them kids, but God, they're bigger than me. And I want to point out that I talked to Bart Miller about this on Thursday. And I asked him, I said, is this the transformative thing that people can see about your recruiting compared to, say, previous administrations? When you bring in a Joey Okla, Joey went to high school 15 minutes from where I grew up in Wisconsin. He was 285 pounds in high school. Hunter Whitenick was 310 pounds in high school. And Mountus Moeller, if his parents were being honest with everybody, he was barely 300 pounds.
Yeah.
All of them came in over 310 pounds, like when they arrived at fall camp. And I had sources, Mike, telling me from the staff, they came in too big. I mean, I know that people, and I agreed with him, Mike, when Lovey Smith would tell me, now, Matt, the most unbelievably overrated stat in all of football is weight. And I actually agreed with Lovey on this. The only point I'm making is that how nice is it for Bart Miller to have guys come into his camp weighing too much and maybe having too much muscle mass when they arrived for tank in the summer and going, guys, like, you didn't have to like act like you were trying to be bodybuilders here. Like, we're trying to keep you quick twitch and athletic-y and how we want to do this. So they're actually trying to trim weight off of some guys and try to get them a little bit, you know, in a more athletic lean frame, say like Alex, like that Paucho looks right now. And Paucho's yep. at 315 pounds on the roster. It's not like he's a small dude, but right. I did ask Paucho that. Yeah, I showed up 265 pounds and Hunter Whitenick's 80 pounds more than I was when I was 18 years old, you know? And wow. I mean, Hunter Whitenick is doing, you know, bench and squat as much as any other offensive lineman in that room right now. That's what I was told. And, you know, and Joey Okla was, I mean, I had somebody tell me, actually it was Alex Pilstrom. He goes, it's amazing that they gave Joey Okla 65, which is Doug Kramer's number, because I see him walking down the halls of the building and he just walks like Kramer, you know, he yeah. acts like Kramer. And so why not just give him 65 so he looks like Kramer? And so these are guys that they're trying to actually now slim down. And it's a new great problem for Illinois to have. Instead of having guys come in and you have to put weight on them and make them competitive in the Big Ten right. up front, Bart Miller's trying to slim them down and just make sure that they're as athletic as they need to be, because from a physical strength standpoint, they ain't lacking for what they're going to need in the Big Ten. And that's just that's a great difference of the Lovey Smith era compared to the Brett Bielema era of what they want to do up front.
So let's take a 180-degree turn then. How's the defensive line look? You know, because obviously that's where the game is won and lost, offense and defensive uh-huh. line. How are we looking there?
There's more bodies. Thank God for JMO to work with, because I was wondering how he got through a full two-hour practice with just the five or six bodies that he was being worked with yeah. on the defensive line last year, quite frankly. The law firm is back, Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton, and they look great. If they can stay healthy, I think there's big things for them at the outside end positions. I would not underestimate the depth that Bryce Barnes can provide to that, because obviously I think think it was the UTSA game, you saw Keith Randolph go down and it wasn't serious because he was there. But like when you see something like that and you knew already they had depth problems,
yep,
had nothing to account for when Keith was not on the field. Not saying Bryce Barnes is Keith Randolph, but he adds a depth piece in terms of effort and in terms of getting to 270 pounds already and being ready to play that position. I'm very, very impressed with what I've seen for him over the spring and now the summer and now early in fall camp. And then you lose Rod Perry at the nose tackle position, but what you do gain is what I've seen out of what JMO has to work with. And one is RJ Wilkins, the transfer from Vanderbilt, who I think athletically is very, very gifted. And at 315 pounds is exactly what you wanted at the nose tackle position. And the other, I would say, major question that needs to be answered is the light bulb ever going to turn on for Calvin Avery? Because if it ever turns on for Calvin Avery at that nose tackle position, like it was promised to be when he was a four-star kid out of Dallas and signed with Lovie Smith's administration, quite frankly, if it doesn't happen for Calvin this year, it's never going to happen. But there are signs that it could happen. And one of the signs is that Keith Randolph told me he's seeing big things out of him in the fall. Now, he's just going against Illinois linemen, and we never know. But I thought I saw the light bulb blinking, you know, late in the year during that Iowa game and in that Northwestern game for Calvin Avery. And then he was able to transform it into being able to get more reps and more snaps in the spring. I'm not trying to paint a picture that Calvin Avery's going to be an every down guy still and has the conditioning to be an every down guy, but I think he can help. I think he can definitely supplement a role in this defense for Terrence Jameson and for Ryan Walters. And the last guy is Vertus Brown, who I think now in year two of making this transition from offensive guard over to defensive tackle is another depth piece that you can put there. I hate the fact that T-Raw Edwards got hurt this summer and really hasn't been able to do much of anything in the fall so far, and probably won't until game week of Wyoming. But you know that with injuries and nicks coming here and there, I do feel like T-Raw is going to be another depth piece that JMO is going to be able to use at least maybe when October rolls around, when he starts to feel 100% and you know, comfortable with what he's doing in that spot. But all of those people that I just mentioned are a heck of a lot more names than JMO was able to work with last year. And that's been the big question mark, is can Illinois build the defensive line depth that they need, even though it's only a 3-man front? You got to be able to rotate as many big bodies in there as you can. And they feel really good about the law firm. They'd like some questions answered at defensive tackle, and they'd like some depth questions answered, but they're doing a better job at that in year two than they certainly were in year one.
How do you feel they stack up out there in the Big Ten West, you know, defensive line wise?
Well, I think favorably, believe it or not, just okay. Because I think so highly of the talent level of Randolph and Newton.
Yep.
You even want to start there. And I think there's a big Greek boy that's now not in West Lafayette named Karloftis. And I mean, with all due respect to his parents, who I love them to death, Yanni is not George. Right. And Yanni's going to be an impact player in the Big Ten, but not to the level of his older brother, George. George Karloftis is somebody Illinois had to use three different people to block on a play.
Right.
So he's no longer there. Nebraska still hasn't really figured out exactly what they want to do, which is unbelievable. Because the black shirts defense used to just be a thing when I was growing up. And then Minnesota, I think, does a really good job up front, but I think they have depth issues. If we're going to go down there, I would say you're probably looking at like an Iowa, if you saw what they were able to do from a yep. defensive front standpoint and able to win the West. They're still heads and shoulders. And Wisconsin is probably head and shoulders above everybody in the West. But everybody in that next tier in the West, I think Illinois, if they can stay healthy, can talent-wise, you know, arguably be right there with everybody else in the West.
So that's good news. So that gives mm-hmm. the Illini fans something to hope for. And it's nice to hear Bryce Barnes. He was one of my former Illinois War Eagles when we were coaching AAU ball. And Bryce kind of has a superpower. He does what is necessary to win. The kid is uber, uber athletic, and his hand-eye coordination is nothing short of amazing. So on a basketball court, you know, people would underestimate him, see this kind of thick, stocky kid bringing the ball down the court, and all of a sudden, you know, he's going past bigger, quicker guys using his body as leverage and you know, powering the ball in for a layup, and they're like, how did that just happen to me?
I promise you, Mike Kegley, 270 pounds now, you would not be able to recognize Bryce Barnes. I mean, it's amazing what he's been able to do in an 18-month period to transform his body. And Bryce Barnes is one of those guys that don't tell me that work ethic isn't a skill, because yep. Work ethic is a skill. I mean, it's not something that you are God-given. It's something that you can improve on. And Bryce Barnes has this just ability to work his butt off. And so that's why he's gone from, honestly, preferred walk-on to somebody that I think is part of the 85 scholar, I believe is part of the 85 scholarship players on Brett Bielema's team, and a pretty significant one at a position where they're going to need his depth. Because quite frankly, with the way that Ryan Walters runs his defense and the way that Brett Bielema expects his guys up front to play, you just can't expect the law firm of Newton and Randolph to play every snap up front.
I agree, or they will get injured.
Right. And so you have to have guys, you know, below them. I think they feel really good about guys like Sed McConnell, who comes in as a young guy. But they need to build the depth below the law firm on the outside edge. But I think that Bryce Barnes helps that immensely as what they're trying to do. Jamal Woods is another guy that you just hope he can get through a season healthy, because he can play both end and tackle. I don't know if they're going to ask him to do a whole lot of tackle. The problem with Jamal is that by the time October hits around, there's something physically going on with him, and it's not he's injury ridden, and it's not his fault. It's because I know this because it's always something different with him. I mean, he has bad luck, and there's just no other way of looking at it. So, but Jamal is, as we all know, as fully healthy as he probably can be. And come August 27th, he'll be part of the depth chart somehow, some way.
Yeah. And so that's great to hear. So defensive line, offensive line look good. Got the quarterbacks we talked about the other night. So we'll keep going through this previews on the show. But I do have another story that was very interesting today in college basketball. And it's a story out of Austin, Texas. And it's making Kansas fans very scared. And Texas assistant coach, former Illini assistant coach, Jarence Howard, resigned today. The coach wiped all UT references from his Twitter account, didn't respond to messages for comment, pursuing other opportunities, says the UT spokesperson. His name has already been removed from the Texas Athletic Staff Directory. He was a key coaching figure at Kansas, and he joined Texas last year after 8 years at Kansas. So, you know, he was basically held off of the recruiting trail, similar to Coach Self the last time, or this last summer here. And so it's very interesting. Wonder if this is a warning shot that maybe things could be getting a little hot at Kansas. And I don't know that you've seen this story, but this came out of the Austin paper and took a lot of people by surprise today.
Yeah, I don't know if I have much to comment on that. Like, I know that, like, there are a lot of interested Illini people for a lot of different reasons, least of which being Self's Kansas program, the most of which being Jarence was a, you know, pretty highly acclaimed assistant under Lon, if I remember correctly, here in Illinois. So he's got connections to the Peoria land area, where I'm very familiar with. I don't know what's going on there. But here's what I do know. Having dealt with I can say this, having dealt with, Chuck Person, the Chuck Person deal at Auburn and the Book Richardson deal, having that, circle all about.
Yep.
I think if the feds were circling Jerrance Howard, we would already know that by now. Like if the feds had come, I know this because I know the day that the feds knocked on Chuck Person's door, because I got a text that said, they're coming this morning. And so I don't know if it goes that far, but I tend to believe that Bill has a way of
insulating himself.
Well, I was going to say weaseling.
Bill is basically, he's a human Yeti. He manages to insulate himself from the environment, but manages to keep, drinks at a very palatable level, apparently.
Yeah. Well, not shy about that. Let's put it that way. From what I saw on Rantoul. I was going to say, I don't want to say weasel his way out, but slither his way out of things and almost make a joke out of it. Call me cynical. I just find that to be the way that this is going to work at Kansas.
Look, everybody knows that Bill Self will be fine at Kansas. Jerrance might lose his job, and Lord knows somebody at Eastern Tennessee is going to get, whacked with a horrible, ruling against their basketball program because the NCAA is mad at Kansas. But, it's just an interesting thing. When I saw that, I immediately thought, well, what would make, Texas and Jerrance split apart? And you just wonder if, who knows? That's the point.
Yeah. I also remind everybody that, I don't know if Jerrance had left yet for, cause he joined Shaka Smart staff at Texas, if I'm not mistaken. And then Baird just kind of, kept him on staff. If that's my understanding. But I do
believe it could be not related.
I do believe that Jerrance Howard was on the Kansas staff when they had stripper poles and money guns, during their midnight.
Oh battle. Yeah. He was on that 8-year run. Yeah.
Yep. So I got to give Bill a lot of credit when they did that, where it was like, you know what, if you want to come get me, come get me. I'm going to have fun with this, until you come get me. So I always give a hat tip to people that just go, you know what, I'm going to have some fun with this darn thing until you and your enforcement staff, which I always do in air quotes, want to come get me because come.
Well, I have no idea if there's anything to do with that, but boy, Kansas fans were certainly prickly today on the internet. So I just, that's what actually made me kind of look at this response.
I got to give you credit for throwing me for a loop here, Mike Cagley, because I have been in football mode, but the only expertise I can give you is you sat right next to me during the Josh Whitman 2-hour period. And I actually sent a text message to some Illinois officials that said, hey, tell Josh Whitman that my question to him about people going 180 miles an hour down that highway he was talking about, that NIL highway that I've now just decided to call pay for play. When you're going 75, are you worried about people going 180 down that highway? That was not intended for, hey, why isn't Illinois cheating again? Or cheating like everybody else. I'm not encouraging that, but I'm in football mode. So we're all worried about what John Ruiz is doing over at Miami or what the oil people are doing in your neck of the woods down at A&M and, whatever. So whatever Jerrance Howard got himself in the thick of that got him to lose a pretty cushy and sweet gig in Austin, Texas, that's a little off my radar right now.
Yeah. And again, it could be nothing. It could be something. Sure. But again, the Kansas fans were very defensive today. So we'll all have to keep our eye on it.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be walking away from, probably 6-figure gigs in Austin, Texas, on that campus in that locale, anytime soon. So I would imagine that Jarrett's did something to,
we don't know.
Well, I don't know if he did anything, but like it's got to be something. I'll put it to you like this. It has to be a significant reason one way or another for Jarrett Howard to walk away from that kind of a gig.
Yeah. Yeah. So whatever happened, we don't wish any ill. Jarrett is a nice guy. Met him several times. We don't wish him any ill will, but it was just interesting to see the Kansas folks kind of circling the wagons today. And to be real honest with you, I didn't immediately put the two things together, but you know, you read a few, you start reading down different people's threads and you're like, oh, well, that's what they're so upset about.
With all due respect to my friend Lance Leipold over at Kansas, like I think that fan base understands they're about to experience another like 3 or 4 or 5 months of all we have to worry about is basketball still at this point. So
yeah. Well, that's why they're nervous, right, Matt? That's why they're nervous. Because if Kansas basketball were to take a shot to the jaw from the NCAA, it's not like they can rely on the football team to carry the water.
Can't beat Texas every year. Like,
you know. Well, folks, we went a little far on the eye on the Illini there at the end, but Jarrett Howard's a former assistant coach for the University of Illinois, so we thought we would bring him in for you fans who've been long-term Illini fans. Now, if you want more stuff, you got to go to IlliniGuys.com. We've got Mike Farrell, who's started for us, the godfather of recruiting. Tomorrow will be his last article that will be out there. The rest of them from the future on will be subscriber only. We kind of put some out there to let people get a flavor for Mike and his personality. And we've gotten fantastic reviews. So, you know, get a look at that story. And if you enjoy Mike along with Matt, and you've got stories by Larry Smith, myself, Connor Kegley, Brad Sturdy is out there. Kedrick Prince has a ton of good recruiting updates. Zambando will give us stories as well. There's a lot of good folks that are contributing. Please take a look at $99 a year. Stay up to date with the Illini. And on the message boards, you can argue incessantly with people who share their love for the Illini and also have the same PTSD that Illini fans have had, whether it's we don't go far enough in the NCAA tournament or we want to see the team go to a bowl game. So it's a real event to be on the board. We'd love to have you there. $99 a year. You get 7-day free trial. We bill you on the 7th day, just like in the Bible. So we're all ready to go. The other thing that we have, of course, is the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular, that radio show, weekly show. You can go to IlliniGuys.com, hit the radio button. You can see where we're on, what day we're on, and the times that we are on, and you can tune in. We ask you to please call up the radio station and thank them for having the Illini Guys on. That means a lot to us. And the last thing is, we have other podcasts besides Eye on the Illini. You can listen to Sturdy for 30, and that's Brad's award-winning podcast that he has all sorts of fantastic Illini and Big Ten guests. And you can also listen to Ked's Recruiting Roundup, where Ked talks about the best in recruiting. And he does it from the side of the student athlete who is being recruited, their parents, and their coaches. Makes for a fascinating listen. With that, we will talk to you next week as we go through our preseason Illini preview. Go Illini.